We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience, with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com. Upwork.com.
The Killer Bees!
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up and down? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. Brian behind the glass. It's a Wednesday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Brian, it's bad to see you.
Yeah, I heard a bit of the show yesterday. Apparently,
it was good you were doing something involved with the station.
The pitch of my voice was being discussed.
Yeah, if you wanted to get that loaded up. I've never heard you that high-pitched in my life.
So this is the NBA Finals promo,
on
right?
On those reads, your promo goes, or on the, yeah, on that
There's
promo,
like
your voice goes way
I don't
up.
Know if
Yeah,
it's,
there was another one.
Yeah. I don't
remember
if it's high pitch. Oh, the other one is.
Catch the NBA Finals tonight maybe, on ESPN 97.5.
Maybe
you right there.
I don't know if it's super high pitched. But it's not mine.
That was you.
You're super high pitched.
Yep.
Maybe a little
and
more
very
higher
excited.
Pitched.
Catch game 4 of the NBA Finals tonight on ESPN 97.5.
That is certainly not my voice.
Here's the guy when he runs faster. Catch the NBA Finals tonight.
I've never heard you more excited than that NBA Final promo, game 3. Where
I'm
you're
trying to mask
NBA
the mundane nature of that shift I was doing on Monday by being excited.
Catch game 3 of the NBA Finals. Yeah, you got super high pitch there. Showed some range. I didn't realize you had that range. Maybe there is a future for you, Brian.
Maybe.
Doing boys to men guts with different voices.
Yeah.
Whenever they just need somebody super high pitched to talk about the finals, I guess.
I liked it. Yeah, but Brian not working this week. Is this your last day this week?
It is, actually.
Oh, my God.
You're not here Friday?
To be fair, the only days that are actually PTO are tomorrow and Friday. The rest have been doing other things for the station.
Texture says, thank goodness, glad to have you boys on. Noon to 3 every day is miserable radio. That's not true. Paul's great. We love Paul. Give us some context. Why don't you like Paul? Texter 713-780-3776.
Not that you'll read it on the
We're
air.
Not going to read bad things about Paul. I love Paul. Paul's hilarious. Astros, their offense was hilarious yesterday. How about the game one defeat? I missed you, Brian. Game one defeat, the hands of the White Sox.
Yeah, not good when you get 9 hits, you scratch across 2 runs, but you hit into, 3 double plays. You just couldn't do anything right. I mean, Christian Walker gets a hit and a walk, but he's catching all kinds of heat because of the strikeout in the 8th, I think it was. And McCullers wasn't great. So, yeah, I mean, your offense, if you're going to get 9 hits and you only scratch across 2 runs and you're playing a team like the White Sox, we talked about the less than teams that they've played recently and whether that's good or bad, if they have a big performance. Well, it's also, I think it's a lot worse when you have a bad performance against a team as bad as the Chicago White Sox.
See, I actually don't think there was any shame of losing yesterday's game. Like, I don't love the way that you did it. The offense I thought was actually okay. I know they didn't come through in the big moment. They didn't hit great with runners in scoring position. Like, I get all that stuff. You got 9 hits and you're hitting lasers all over the field right at people. Like, that's going to happen. That's the frustration of baseball. And plus, the pitching matchup actually favored Chicago. Like, people don't want to realize that, but it is the absolute truth. Lance McCullers is not a better pitcher than Shane Smith, who the White Sox ran out yesterday.
Smith is pretty good. You know, he lowered his earned run average, I believe, but I mean, he came in with, I think it was a 245, but I mean, he has good stuff. And You know, he looks like he's a foundational piece for them in the rotation, the guy that they can build around a little bit too, because they've been trying to get draft picks and trying to get better and hit the reset button with some of these trades. But he pitched a good game last night. I mean, and he basically he gave up hits, but he got the timely double plays when he needed them, and they got the win.
Yeah, they had the pitching advantage yesterday. If you gave me the option of having Shane Smith or Lance McCullers the rest of the year, I'd actually take Shane Smith. Sorry to say that. Bury me in the H, whatever. And that's not to, like demean Lance McCullers. I know it sounds that way. I just think Shane Smith's good. And Lance McCullers at this stage of his career is not bad. Like, pretty good. Like, he has potential to give you good starts, obviously. I actually don't think McCullers' start was awful yesterday. Obviously, he lacked control, which isn't great. He didn't have the feel of the breaking ball, but that's also the danger of, like, being a breaking ball pitcher, which he is at this stage of his career. Sometimes you can't land those for strikes as easy as you can land the fastballs for strike. Although Lance McCullers in his entire career has never been known as somebody who has tremendous amount of command. Only gave up four hits. The four walks was bad. The innings he gave up runs to, like the one run in the second inning, he gives up a two-out walk with the bases empty, and then all of a sudden a bad carom off the wall, you know, Cam Smith throwing the ball to the wrong bag, leads to a run there. He got Crawford boxed, I think, by Luis Robert. That was a home run like in 4-30 ballpark. So, I mean, not the line score that you want from Lance McCullers, but all in all, I didn't think it was a bad, bad start. He got you through five innings, through 96 pitches. Like, it wasn't the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, no, I mean, for me, I understand it from a run perspective, and I think everything you said is valid. I think for me, it's just that you're coming off two good starts, and you're hoping that the momentum keeps building forward where he does have control, where he's not running his pitch count up, where, you know, his breaking ball is effective. And we both said, I mean, he still had six strikeouts, and that's still pretty damn good because we're not expecting 12. But at the same time, the walks were in very untimely places, and he got his pitch count up. He was deep in a lot of counts. And he just didn't have the command that he had shown in the last two starts, which was disappointing to me.
Yeah, it was shaky. Like, to me, that was really the only issue of his start. And, like, you have to take that with Lance McCullers. He's going to have outings where he has trouble with the command, especially with the new version of Lance McCullers, where he can't just, you know, heave up a 95, 96 mile per hour fastball, get that over for a strike. He can't really do that because his fastball doesn't play as much. It's more of an off-balance pitch, his fastball. Like, he struck out one guy with the fastball because he knew he was sitting breaking ball and snuck by a 92-mile-per-hour sinker. But, no, like, the normal velo is there. Not that it's high velo for Lance, but, like, there wasn't a droppage there. I looked at, like, the spin rate and all that stuff because I'm a nerd. He had a bunch of pitches that were over 3,000 RPMs, which is elite. I think there was, like, seven or eight. He had 25 pitches that were 2,900 or plus RPMs. So it was just, to me, it was simply control. That's it. Not a big deal. We move on. I'm happy he gave you five innings as opposed to getting, you know, ousted from the game after three.
Yeah, tongue in cheek, but Luis Robert, I would try to avoid him from now on. Dude has just unbelievable stats against the Astros. I mean, he just, what did Blummer say last night, or TK, that he's become the new Ty France?
Yeah.
Where he just seems to have career stats against the Houston Astros.
That home run was kind of a cheapie, but he does. Like, he for some reason beats up on the Astros pitching staff, and he's not a good hitter, really.
No, he's not.
I'd like to trade for him just so he doesn't have to face you anymore.
Exactly. I thought Paredes was going to sneak one into the boxes too. It seemed like it died off the bat. I think he thought it was gone, and I thought, well, at the very least, that's going to carry him off the scoreboard, and then it was caught on the warning track.
See, I felt differently. I don't feel that Isak thought he caught it. I thought he kind of like left the box feeling a little disappointed. They fooled the cameraman though. Cameraman was like in the corner. Like, I was thinking that ball is gone, fair foul. And then he, like, pans back down quickly to Benintendi. He's catching the ball shy of the track. I'm like, oh, okay, that's cool.
That's where I am. I thought it was – I was looking for it up halfway up the pole going, is that going to go foul? Because he looked like he was watching it when he hit it, and I think he thought it was either going to go foul or it was gone.
See, I felt differently about Isak. I thought Isak – whenever Isak left the box, I feel like he knew that it was short.
Yeah, and I just saw it differently. I watched it this morning, and I thought, man, it looked like he thought that's either foul or it's gone. And you're right, the cameraman swung right down the line. So I'm naturally looking like, where's the ball? Is it going to be halfway up the pole? Is it going to be on left side or the right side? And then all of a sudden I look down, I'm like, here's the out, is it Benintendi just kind of camping under it right at the base of the wall and bringing it in. I'm like, well, damn, that's disappointing.
Yeah, I'm not a I hate Benintendi. I hate Andrew Benintendi.
Why?
Because the catch he made against Bregman, 25% catch probability, that took away the game-winning run. That series could be different. Andrew Benintendi and Joe West changed the complexion of that entire series. We might be talking about three Astro World Series titles if it wasn't for Andrew Benintendi and Joe West. If the Astros could win a playoff game at home, if Andrew Benintendi's existence was not against the Astros and Joe West didn't exist, mm-hmm. Astros have five World Series titles.
Five.
Yeah. Right. If they win a home game against the Nationals, they win a World Series. If they win a home game against the Rangers, they're in the World Series that the Rangers won. I think the Astros get that one. I'm a little bit tongue-in-cheek about Benintendi and Joe West. That was a good Red Sox team, but the Astros were really good that year.
The Red really Sox have those typical outfielders that when they go get paid somewhere else, they just completely just disappear statistically.
I mean, Mookie Betts doing okay.
I mean, what's the other guy that went to the Yankees? The same thing. Signed the five-year big-time deal, and then did nothing for the Yankees.
Recently?
No, probably within the last 10 years.
Johnny Damon?
No, after Damon. I'll look it up.
I mean, Betts has been pretty good.
Oh,
he got traded. Yeah, wasn't a free agent. Traded, yeah. He's been pretty good. I want Willie Abreu back. It's a bad trade by Click. I don't love that trade. People hate when I bring that up. But I wish they wouldn't have traded Abreu for Vasquez because there's your left-handed bat, but whatever. Astros bullpen was very good after Lance McCullers, which has been awesome to see. Like you got Souza, Dubin, and Ort that combined to go four no-hit innings. Not four shutout innings. They went four no-hit innings. And like that stuff gets lost sometimes whenever you don't come back to win. Like, oh, you leave the game, McCullers, you know, you're trailing. A lot of times we don't give the relievers the love that they deserve whenever the offense doesn't come from behind to win. But I tip my cap to Souza, Dubin, and Ort with four no-hit innings. Do you want to guess the Astros bullpen ERA? Oh, looked boy. It up this morning because I was curious after this bullpen outing yesterday.
2.45?
Not quite that good. They've had a couple of blow-ups. They're 3.33 on the year, but it's seventh best in all of Major League Baseball. If I would have told you at the start of the year that the Astros would have a top seven bullpen ERA, would you have taken it?
Yeah.
Would you have believed me?
No.
Yeah.
No, just because of the amount of change that they went through at the end of the year and getting rid of Presley and you know, searching for veterans and not knowing what you were basically trying to do in the fifth, sixth, and seventh innings. I would take that.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, get your thoughts on this Astros game. A couple of managerial and coaching decisions that were noteworthy yesterday as well. Mariners lost, so still a three-game lead. You know, I'm starting to look at these other teams that are, like, making up ground in the AL West. Like, you've lost back-to-back games. Mariners have lost back-to-back games. So it's like, yay, you're still three-game lead in the AL West. But it's like, oh, the Angels are closing ground. Oh, the Rangers are closing ground, even though they've been terrible. All right, busy show. Will Doctor, U.S. Open tomorrow at Oakmont. It's going to be a fun challenge for these golfers. It'll be a fun conversation with Will Doctor, Dr. Media 5'9", best golf handicapper in the business. We'll talk more about Lance McCullers later. Nick Chubb, what are realistic expectations for him? And also, the Rockets apparently do have interest in Kevin Durant. We'll talk about that. We'll get to the managerial coaching decisions the Astros made yesterday that caught my eye. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line on YouTube at ESPN Houston, on TikTok at ESPN 975. We live. I'm at Jeremy J. Branham on TikTok. Blinkers, you have TikTok yet?
No, sir.
Brian has a TikTok.
I do.
What's your TikTok?
I don't actually remember. Barely used it.
Awesome. Great way to plug it by not knowing your handle. I'll just say mine twice. I'm at Jeremy J. Branham. If you're interested in Brian, just follow me at Jeremy J. Branham. We're also on Twitter at ESPN 975. Blinkers at Pac-Man Joel. Brian at Sack by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Mike Holley, go Cougs. U of H class of 1990. He used to protect the Heisman Trophy winner, Andre Ware. And now he wants to protect you and your business. They've been doing it for nearly 25 years, is 25 years now. HRMP provides comprehensive human capital management services, which include HR compliance, benefits administration, and payroll. You don't want to do that stuff anymore. You want to spend your time and your resources other places in your business. Totally get it. Let HRMP take a little bit off your plate. They're going to customize a plan for whatever you need. Not reading off a menu. It's not cookie cutter. Whatever you need, HRMP is going to create a plan for whatever. It could be a small task. It could be a massive task. Whatever it is, HRMP Gotcha. Their customer service, second to none. You'll never talk to a stranger. You'll always be calling someone familiar with you, familiar with your company. I can speak to that customer service. Anytime I have a question, quick response, very easy to understand. Thankful for HR&P. So let HR&P take on the demands of human resources. Eliminate your HR burdens so you can get back to growing your business or golfing more. Give them a call, 281-880-6525. Let HR&P customize a plan for you, 281-880-6525, or check them out online at hrp.net. That's hrp.net.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Were you talking about Jacoby Ellsbury?
Yeah, I looked it up, and Brian actually guessed it too when I was going to the restroom. But yeah, it was Jacoby Ellsbury. I think he and Ben Attendee remind me of similar situations when they got out of Boston. They looked to cash in. They got big deals, money, and they just kind of flamed out.
Yeah, Ellsbury had injury, didn't he? Because he had some solid years in New York. Nothing like that almost MVP finish, but that year was an anomaly. Ellsbury's career numbers are weird, man. Like, he didn't do much early in his career, then had a 32-homer year, second MVP.
Wow.
Yeah, and then his second most home runs in a year was half of that.
Yeah.
16. Wow. That was his first year in New York.
I never would imagine, especially that's not in the home run era of baseball either. 32 bombs for him is
2011
impressive.
With Boston. They were probably already stealing signs. They were probably using like the flip phone to steal signs back then at Fenway. When he had 32 homers.
When did the juice ball era kind of start? It was like 16, 17? I'm trying to remember when the numbers started jumping up and becoming crazy.
Would you throw the Maguire Sosa stuff in there?
No, he's talking about that.
They were juicing themselves. I'm talking about the baseballs. I know it kind of culminated with 2019 and then it backed off after that. But
everybody was like, it's launch angle. I don't remember that year.
I was just trying to see if it coincided with Jacoby, but you answered the question already.
Maybe late 2010s. But that was also the sign-stealing era.
True.
So, I don't know. That's just, it's crazy. 32 homers in a year. He had 104 in his career. He had almost a third of his career home runs in one season.
That's crazy.
You know who also kind of had a similar to that was Gleyber Torres.
I like Gleyber Torres, actually.
But he had that one power year where he had like 38 home runs, and I don't think he's top 30 since.
No, but he's had some years that were like, okay, it makes a little sense. Now, you're right. It is big. It was a 1938 homer. They're probably stealing signs, and it was probably Goldilocks balls because he was with the Yankees. But he had 38 in his second year. But, I mean, he had 24 as a rookie. He had 24, 25, and 22, and 23. So, like, again, pretty big outlier, but not as crazy.
Not as crazy.
But a big outlier, I would agree. 38 of his home runs came in that solo year. He has 143 in his career. Now, I like him. I actually kind of wanted him as an Astro, but I don't think they like his defense because he could have been your second baseman.
Is he in Minnesota?
Tigers.
Oh, Tigers.
Yeah, he's with Detroit.
What was the other? Is the other Yankee that was they were high on one time is in Minnesota?
You got to give me a name.
Yeah, I got to look it up again. He was right there with Gleyber.
You talking about, actually, I think I know who you're talking about. Are you talking about Miguel Andujar?
No.
Oh, okay. No, maybe I don't
get it.
713-780-ESPN. What'd you think of Joe Espada's decision with two outs, the tying run on deck, using Shea Whitcomb to pinch hit for Jacob Melton against a lefty?
Yeah, I was wondering. Yeah, I was looking at who else on the bench he thought he was going to go to. But, yeah, I was curious why he left him in there just because I didn't know if he was too – the moment was too big for him too early. He hadn't been playing. I was questioning it.
I have no problem pinch hitting for Melton there. Like, Melton's been awful and it's lefty on lefty. So, like, okay, yeah, cool. Go to a pinch hitter. You have three righties on the bench, though. Mm-hmm. You got Whitcomb, you got Brendan Rodgers, and you have Dubon. And he went with Shea Whitcomb over those other two, which – is kind of curious. Like, they kept Brendan Rodgers on this roster up until now. They kept Shea Whitcomb down in the farm, and then in a must-have get-on-base situation, they go with Whitcomb over Rodgers. That was interesting.
So you would go Rodgers over Dubon?
To get on base in that spot against a lefty, I think I'd go Dubon.
I was leaning Dubon.
I think I go Dubon because at least he's going to put the ball in play. Dubon's numbers against lefties aren't bad. Rogers' numbers against lefties aren't bad. But I can't believe they went Shea Whitcomb over both of them.
I understand questioning it because at the time I was like,
because
Blummer was even going down the list of everybody that he could go to. And I just think from a matchup perspective, you would go with one of those guys. But, I mean, Joe's going to Joe sometimes.
So who would you have?
I would have gone with Dubon.
I saw something about J.D. Martinez, and I got intrigued in the idea of not that it would happen because the Astros don't want to pay J.D. Martinez, but J.D. Martinez is a better option than like three guys that are currently on your team. He's a better option than Shea Whitcomb. He's a better option than Cesar Salazar because he doesn't ever play. He's a better option than Brendan Rodgers, who's your backup second baseman that can't play any other position and literally got pinch hit. Didn't get pinch hit for, but literally got picked over with Shea Whitcomb yesterday.
Yeah, so... Look, I've always been a fan of getting J.D. Martinez, depending on the price, just because of the fact that with you've got a guy like Yordan that's been out. He can play some first base. You don't really want him in the outfield. But one thing he can do is he's been a pretty steady hitter throughout his career. I know that the first priority seems to be with everybody to add a left-handed bat. But if you want to, if he's still out there hanging around and you want to add a bat that actually has been known to hit, I'm fine with kicking the tires on a J.D. Martinez. I'm curious why someone hasn't picked him up yet, unless maybe he has fallen off.
He had his numbers last year were okay. Like, they're major league worthy. The Savant numbers were still fine with him. Now, he is older. He doesn't play a position. He's a DH only. Ken Rosenthal kind of alluded to the fact that he's being very selective on where he goes. There was another article from a month ago saying that he's not been given a major league contract. Like, maybe some minor league contracts have presented itself, but he's either being selective or nobody wants him. I think he gives you a better option off the bench than some of these other guys, but is it worth it? Financially, probably not. And the Astros are also like up against it, against the luxury tax. So, like, do you want to go into the luxury tax because of J.D. Martinez? Because he's going to give you a couple of pinch hits a week? Probably not.
Do you think Rizzo's done?
I think he's done, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they were talking about he's still open to offers as well, but I think J.D. Martinez, even though the Astros need a left-handed bat,
that's what I was thinking.
And Rizzo can actually play a little bit of defense, I think that J.D. Martinez is a better option than Rizzo.
Yeah, I was just thinking from the standpoint, I know Rizzo's out there, and I think that people were wondering, contemplating if he was going to announce his retirement, and then I had heard that he would consider playing for somebody else. I'm going, he's a left-handed bat. I used to be a fan of his when he was in Chicago. He had some decent. He was okay with the Yankees, but he also could be better than what you have on the bench.
Yeah, see, I don't really disagree. I would prefer Martinez over Rizzo, even though Martinez is right-handed and Rizzo is left-handed. I think Martinez is just a better hitter. And I really like. I know that Rizzo can play a position, but are you really going to play him over Walker? Some Astro fans would say, "Yeah, Walker stinks." Even though Walker's been hitting the baseball hard. But I agree with you that, like, he's more worthy of a roster spot than Salazar. Uh-huh. And, the whole idea, we're keeping Salazar because we might have both catchers in the lineup. Like, today, they have Yiner catching and Caratini DHing. Okay, that's fine. And their fear is one of them gets hurt, and then Caratini has to catch, and you burn the D. So what? So what? That's a one-game problem.
Right.
So I feel like the emergency third catcher being on the roster is a waste of a roster spot.
Yeah, and I feel like, again, I don't know if his bat speed is diminished or there's something that I haven't heard or seen or that I'm missing. But, choking up with two strikes, but he was able to put the bat on the baseball. I think that if you need someone to fill in at first base, he's fully capable of doing that. But I always thought he was a decent hitter.
Yeah, he's been really bad offensively the last couple of years. I mean, really, I guess that's relative. He hasn't been good. Now, would he give you better at-bats than Salazar? Yeah. Does he give you a left-handed option off the bench whenever Mauricio Dubon's up in the eighth inning? Yeah. So, like, I do think that there is a little bit of value to both of those guys. It's just probably not worth the money, they would say. Mm-hmm. But whatever. We're operating from an idea where, like, spare no expense. We talked about Walker. I think Christian Walker is going to break out soon. He had a decent day at the plate. I understand it wasn't in crunch time when everybody wanted him to. 1-for-3 with a walk. I'll take that every day. Every day. And again, he continues to hit rockets right at people.
Well, yeah, I was going to say the ball that he's the first out that he made was 105 plus off the bat to dead center field. I mean, he is barreling baseballs. I know we hate hearing that because, that was the early prognosis on trying to explain Abreu and saying that he was going to snap out of it. Christian Walker looks like he's a capable major league hitter. The strikeout was frustrating, but even in the strikeout with the two guys on base, he's fighting off pitches. He laid off a very tough sweeper. He fouled off a couple of pitches. Then he got tied up inside, and it's unfortunate. But I still believe I believe way more in Christian Walker than I ever did when Abreu was struggling.
Walker and Abreu's first year in Houston, are their numbers are similar, but I'm with you on the eye test. I think Walker is going to break out soon. Like, people, why is he still hitting in the middle of the order? Because for the Astros to be what their potential is, they need Walker to be solid. They need Yiner to be solid, and Yiner has been solid like the last month or so. And then they need Yordan back, obviously. I thought Cam Smith had a rough night. Israel already texting in, scored the first run for the Astros. His little seeing eye single that he squeaked down the first base line. To me, it wasn't on the offensive end. I thought that ball that he misplayed in the second inning, I thought it was a bad play on two fronts. One, I don't think he should have ever let it get to the wall. Like, I think he could have cut that ball off. Mm-hmm. Like, lay out for it, man. Don't let it get. How do you prevent a carom off the wall? Don't let it get to the wall. And look, maybe that's just him not playing the position, doesn't realize the importance of that because he hasn't had a ton of games out in right field. Okay, that's fine, but it also wasn't a great play. And then secondly, like, you can do nothing about the carom off the wall. Like, that was a bad carom off the wall, unfortunate. But Cam Smith comes up firing to second base, just does not know the situation. And do you get till at the plate? Maybe not. Like, I would like to have seen it. But throwing it to second base there was a boneheaded mistake.
That was cringeworthy to me because of the fact that even Altuve is lined up towards second base. And I'm like, if there's a cut with a play at the plate, you at least have a chance. But the fact that he not all – and you're right, I didn't focus as much on – I was so frustrated by the throw – that he probably could have gotten to that baseball quicker. But at the same time, he just turns and wheels and throws to second base. And I'm going, what are we doing? Because I think you had a legitimate chance at the plate.
Yeah, it was that was a mistake there for Cam Smith. The other coaching thing that I – and look, he's played a very good right field. Mm-hmm. Like, are we being nitpicky about one specific play? Yes, but we do that with everybody.
We're also doing it in a game that ended up 4-2 where, you know, runs were at a premium. But you look at those things.
Yeah, and I want – yeah, like, does Lance's start look different? I mean, at least one run different. Maybe more. I don't know. And then the other coaching thing I had – how about that stop sign at third base for Tony Pettisica? Tony Pettisica and Gary Pettis are polar opposites. Gary Pettis was a windmill. Come on. Pettisica is a red light in a school zone.
I watched it going, jeez. Hey, let's see what happens with the run. The run still scores, but the question remains, if he sends him, does I think it was Cam at second, but does the runner at second advance to third, in which case
– I don't think so.
The sack fly would have scored another run. That's the question.
You're right. See, I'm of the belief it didn't cost him a run. That particular play, don't love it, but they ended up scoring the run on the Isak Paredes sacrifice fly.
Right.
Pena would not have tripled on that play.
Okay, Pena.
It was Pena, and the ball was 315 feet away from home plate. Like, I understand that it got wedged, and I understand Andrew Pinatini doesn't have a cannon for an arm, but if you go back and you look at where Pena was, like, cruising into second about the time that Benintendi picked up the ball, I don't think Pena would have had any chance for a triple. So I don't think it cost him a run.
Right. It did. I mean, just because of the fact that the Paredes fly ball got him in, but the reason why I said that is, you never know what we don't know, which is when it's fielded and thrown in, if they are trying to get him at the plate as he's going for the plate, then maybe Pena ends up being able to get advance on the throw.
Yeah, possible. It is reachy, though, because that would require two things. It would require Benintendi trying to throw it 315 feet from the Crawford boxes to the plate. I mean, good left fielder. You throw a line drive, hit the cutoff, man, prevent that from happening. And plus, I don't think there would have been a play at the plate. Like, I think that's how bad of a stop it was. I think Cam Smith goes, there's not even an attempt at Cam Smith. So I don't believe it cost him a run. Maybe a 10% chance that it did. Texter, Cam was 100% listening to the cutoff man on that play. Okay. So you're telling me the cutoff man was yelling at Cam Smith, 2-2-2-2-2. Do not believe it. Do not believe it. You're going to have to show me proof on that one.
It is Altuve. There's a chance.
Plus, do you think Jose Altuve's yelling at Cam, hey, here's where to go with the base? Jose Altuve, at this stage of his career, doesn't strike me as a guy that's telling the right fielder where to go with the baseball.
No, I that would probably not be the case.
Yeah. You're going to have to show me proof on that one, Texter, because I'm not buying what you're selling. Rizzo blocked a trade to Houston prior to Abreu. Is that true?
I remember that.
He blocked a trade?
I don't know if he blocked it, per se. I know that he had said, remember, because when he was free, the first time the Yankees signed him, or either signed him or re-signed him, and his agent came out and said Houston was interested, and that was just to provoke the Yankees, who then re-signed him or signed him.
Yeah, that's not rejecting the Astros.
But
though.
I vaguely remember something about him rejecting a trade, but I can't recall.
The most that I remember about Rizzo in Houston, he might have said something with the sign scandal stuff, like that always like pops up every now and then. But when Rizzo was a free agent and Abreu was a free agent, I think it was Ken Rosenthal, like you said, that reported that Anthony Rizzo was about to sign with the Astros.
He did it during a game.
No, it was in the offseason.
Oh, I thought it was at one point that the rumor started because Rosenthal was like on the sidelines.
No, this was the offseason. Okay. This was the offseason. I just pulled the article. Astros targeting Anthony Rizzo in free agency November 14, 2022. But it was reported that he was getting close to signing with the Astros. I don't remember Anthony Rizzo rejecting a trade to the Astros.
I just remember, and maybe it was whether the Yankees were in the playoffs that year or not. I remember that they were talking about Rosenthal was already talking about the market for Rizzo. And I thought he had mentioned the Astros then. And then I remember that article. Yeah.
Like the Astros were in desperate need of a first baseman at that time. Like, hey, Rizzo's going to be a free agent. Astros need a first baseman. I can see the connection. But when the report was Rizzo is about to be an Astro or close to being an Astro, was in the offseason. And then the very next day, he was a Yankee. Yep. And we're like, okay, was this planted? And it probably was. Yeah. It probably was a plan. But I don't remember. And I Google tells me there are no reports of him ever rejecting a trade to the Astros. I believe that you're making that up. Maybe you just a little bit of revisionist history there. Not maybe you just misremember, like Roger Clemens once famously did. Why don't they get rid of the hitting coach? It's not the hitting coach's fault. No. In fact, Jose Altuve was crediting Alex Cintron for his turnaround.
That's right.
When this season.
Extra work. Yep.
Yeah. How about Jake Meyers having a fantastic season? Do we want to praise the hitting coach? How about Jeremy Pena going from a mediocre offensive player at best to having an MVP, top five MVP caliber season? Do we want to talk about the prowess of the brilliance of Alex Cintron and Snitker there? Or are we just going to ignore the good and pay a lot of attention to the bad?
And he puts the hammers out there with the sleeveless sweatshirts.
Yeah, that was kind of weird.
Gio Urshela was the other one I was thinking of. He's in Oakland.
Oh, yeah, Gio Urshela. I feel like he hit some big homers.
Yeah, Urshela and Glaber were supposed to be hotshot prospects for the Yankees at one time.
Yeah. He stated in an interview he would never go to Houston regarding the trade. Okay, I don't remember that. You'll have to show me a report on that. And then another texter, Paul is awesome. How can that dude say that? He must not be from H-Town, I would guess. Probably. Yeah, Paul's the best. He's the bee's niece. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Uncle Barney says, look at Morgan Insberg's single season to career home run. Insberg hit 36 home runs in his fourth place MVP finish in 2005. He hit 110 career home runs. So about a third of his home runs that one season, too. Now, in Insberg's defense, he did have a couple of years where he hit over 20. He had a year where he hit 23, he had a year where he hit 25, and then his big year was 36. And then outside of those 3 years, pretty much nothing. Pretty much nothing.
You could kind of, not to the same degree, but maybe paint a similar picture to Bregman. He had a 41 home run year? And then every year since then, he's been down in the low to mid-20s.
Didn't he have a big year in 18, too, though?
He did. He was 30-plus in 18, 41 in 19, and every year since, he's been low to mid-20s.
Yeah. You could. 41 home runs that year, 202 in his career, though, so it's about a quarter, I guess, or a fifth.
A fifth, yeah. I mean, it is in the Goldilocks era.
Okay, so...
Or are you thinking sign stealing?
If I'm making the claim that the Astros continue to sign still through the 2019 season, which the report says that did not happen. The report says they stopped doing it early 2018. If I'm arguing against that point, Exhibit A, or in this case, Exhibit AB, would be Alex Bregman's 41 home runs in 2019. Oh, you're telling me they stopped? Okay, well, what about Alex Bregman, who hit 41 in 19, and then his next most after that was 26 last year?
Maybe.
It's a solid case.
I think it's a pretty solid case.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't disagree. Like, I do tend to believe the report because it seems to be unanimous, but, I mean, it's a strong argument if you're making the other side.
I think a good counterpoint is the Goldilocks balls. The Goldilocks balls. And look, Bregman hit a bunch of home runs to start this season, too. I mean, Bregman 11 home runs in 51 games. Like, he was on a 30-plus season. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But that wasn't very hitter-friendly Fenway Park.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, and everybody said it coming in. If he goes to Boston, he's going to feast off that wall. And he got off to one hell of a start in Fenway.
You think Bregman opts out?
The injury is going to be tough because of the injury. If he doesn't get injured, I think he tests the waters and then re-signs. At the very least, he re-signs with Boston.
See, if he comes, and he's going to come back this year. When he comes back this year, if he puts up similar slash numbers to what he was putting up, I think it's in play. Mm-hmm. I think it's in play because, remember, a lot of that money is deferred.
Yeah.
What I think is plausible, actually, is the whole Matt Chapman situation where Bregman signed the 1 year plus player option plus player option. Matt Chapman did that with San Francisco, and then Chapman opted out and then re-signed. We actually agreed to an extension before he ever opted out. I could see them doing that.
And that's why I said I think that he likes Boston. I think that he would opt out and then probably start negotiating with the Red Sox.
The one thing, though, is the Red Sox do have an abundance of infielders with all these young kids.
Well, they got an abundance of young talent, too, because you mentioned Abreu, and they were talking about would they consider trading him because of all the young kids that they're bringing up.
The outfielders don't really come into play for Bregman, though.
No, not for Bregman.
So that's, like, one thing that I'd be interested in.
They got a third baseman coming up?
I mean, some of these infielders maybe could play there. Okay. I don't know. Like, what's the Marcillo? The Marcillo guy's playing third, Mayor, however you say his name. Mm-hmm. People were trying to say he intentionally dropped a pop-up the other day. That led to a double play.
Oh, yeah, I saw it.
Did you watch that play?
I did. Because the catcher and the third baseman converged.
Yeah.
And then he kind of peeled back. Didn't he kind of peel back and leave it to the catcher?
No, the catcher peeled back, left it to him. Do you think he dropped it on purpose?
I don't. I thought they lost it.
Plus, here's the other thing. That ball landed, like, this far fair. Mm-hmm. Like, that could have very easily been a foul ball. There's no way in the world he tried to drop that ball. That was the stupidest take from a Red Sox fan I've ever seen.
I saw that. I did.
Like, you're not going to – did you watch this play, Brian?
No, I haven't seen
it. It was bases loaded, less than two outs, one out, no outs, it doesn't matter. Bases loaded, less than two outs, high pop-up about 30 feet up the third baseline. We all know as infielders, don't let the catcher catch the ball if you can get to it. The umpires throw up the infield fly, if fair, because if it lands foul, you can't have an infield fly on a ball that lands foul. Mayor, however you say his name, runs to the ball. His body is 90% in foul territory, and the ball misses his glove by about that much and drops in fair, 30 feet up the line, that like a foot fair, picks it up, double play. And Red Sox fans were trying to claim that it was a heads-up play, dropped it on purpose. No, he overran the ball, had no idea it was going to be fair or foul, and there's no way he knew it could have been a double play. It was wild. Wild.
Yeah, I don't know what they would... I think they're just obviously looking at the result and trying to make it out like, oh, heavy play. Oh, but if it's that close to being fair or foul and the bases are loaded, you're going to take the out.
It was ridiculous.
You're not going to risk a foul ball.
He comes flying in from third in foul territory and then kind of like pirouettes and like ballet moves and his glove hits it and it lands fair. There's no way he intentionally let that ball drop.
What was that?
I think that was Charlotte.
Banging on the door. I thought we had an intruder. We had a Twitch member that found our area. Ocho, I predicted the White Sox would win 2 out of 3.
A fat guy in his underwear living in his mother's basement.
Thank you, Coach. I predicted the White Sox would win 2 out of 3 and that Luis Robert would become prime Pujols. Every opposing starting pitcher might as well be Pedro Martinez against this offense. That guy's good. Don't sleep on Shane Smith. Shane Smith's fine. We can't see your hands, Branham. Yeah, my bad. I forgot this wasn't TV. The Twitchers and the YouTubers and the TikTokers and the Twitters could see it, though. A texter, I am from Houston area. I don't like mediocre or worse radio. That's why you found us. That's why you're here with us. Because if you don't like mediocre or worse radio, you would have turned it off. But here you are.
He thanked us, didn't
with
he?
Us. Yeah. A texter, how is that not an infield fly? It is an infield fly, if fair. But the runner started to run around because nobody ever knows how to react whenever an infield fly lands into the field. But, yeah, it was. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. So Kevin Durant still on the table for the Rockets? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
The best in Houston sports talk is ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
So apparently the Rockets do have some interest on Kevin Durant. This is from Shams this morning. Phoenix Suns and Kevin Durant's business partner, blah, 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 have met with multiple teams over the past week and are sifting through trade scenarios. teams that have expressed interest in Durant, sources said, mainly feature, I don't know if the order matters here, but mainly feature the Rockets, Spurs, Heat, Timberwolves, and New York Knicks. These inquiries on Durant have happened in the last 7 to 10 days. So I take Sham seriously. The Rockets are in on Kevin Durant, at least kicking the tires on Kevin Durant.
And I think that we talk about this all the time. They should be. I mean, they should be in on the kicking of the tires and seeing what the price is going to be. They just shouldn't overpay. I think that because you're sitting on something that Phoenix really wants and the picks that you have that are theirs, I think that you have bargaining power. And so you can kick the tires, and then if it gets down to the negotiations, I don't think you have to overpay for Kevin Durant because they want those back, and I think that they would probably prefer to trade with you if possible. So, yeah, I'm glad that they're interested. I just don't want them to overpay.
Yeah, that's ultimately what it comes down to as well, because I like Kevin Durant with the Rockets. I like the idea there, but I also don't love the price tags that I've been seeing. Like, obviously, you have to make the salaries work and all of that. I am uncomfortable giving up Jalen Green for Kevin Durant.
I am too.
So, like, that to me feels like too much.
Yeah, see, you're trying to do them a favor in the process because it's twofold. He doesn't want to be there anymore. You are basically, because of your owner, in a very precarious position of not having a whole lot of draft capital, if any, for the next 3-4 years that's significant. And you're stuck under 3 big contracts. And you would like to get your picks back because you suck. So I don't think Jalen Green is something that should be involved in any one of those discussions. If you're going to include the picks, then you take whatever we want to give you to make the salary work, and we'll figure out the picks and maybe a bench player or two or a younger player or two in that regard. I don't think Jalen or Şengün or any your main players should be involved in that deal.
Yeah, but the Rockets don't have the Suns over the barrel.
Not over the barrel per se, but you have an advantage because they want their picks because they know if they're not going to be that competitive that they would like to know that where they finish is where they're going to be drafted.
What's more important to the Suns, though, getting their picks back or getting the best possible offer?
Well, I mean, I think it's twofold. I think the Rockets still have a bunch of young talent that they would be interested in, but it's how they evaluate the other talent that would be included. Reed Sheppard, Cam Whitmore, I think there's a lot of pluses there for a lot of GMs in this league. The number 10 pick, a lot of plus there to pick in the top 10.
Sure. I mean, the Rockets have a lot of assets, but we don't know how many of those assets they'd be wanting to give. And then these other teams have assets too. Mm-hmm. So, like, obviously Phoenix would be intrigued with young players' draft picks, and their draft picks would be intriguing. But that doesn't automatically mean it would be the best deal just because you have their draft picks.
Not the best deal.
Like if San Antonio gave them number 3. Like, that's the best piece, probably.
Depending on what else you get, because of the fact that they have said privately and whoever they're talking to that puts this stuff out there amongst Shams and Windhorse and guys like that, that they would like to get back one or two of their own picks. Kind of already kind of setting the stage for, we're going to give it our best go to try and salvage something with this team, but we might not be very good for a couple of years.
Yeah, but if you're Phoenix and you're in the shoes of the Suns GM, are you saying, we're getting our picks back, or we're getting the best offer we can get?
No, I understand what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, look, you're gonna, if you can get the equivalent of picks by getting good young talent, if you get Castle, if you get some of these guys, and again, if they evaluate guys like that and think that there's a guy long term that I really want that I think is more valuable than anybody coming out in the draft the next couple of years, then you attack that deal.
Yeah, like I would probably take the, well, I mean, I said the number 3 pick. Spurs have the number 2 pick.
Yeah.
Like, if the Spurs are willing to give me the number 2 pick, and I don't know that they are, I care more about the number 2 pick than getting my future picks back. Like, I feel like us in Houston are over-glorifying those picks because it's advantageous to the Suns. The Suns' biggest desire is getting the most talent that they could possibly get. So I don't think that the whole idea, we must get our picks back, is the front of mind for Phoenix.
I'm saying that they have targeted that as being one of the things that they want. They want to get their picks back.
In a trade with Houston.
But yes.
if you're Phoenix and you could get 2 of your picks back, or you could get the number 2 pick, what are you picking?
Again, it depends on how you evaluate who's in the draft.
Well, that's why I asked you.
But I'm saying, if I think that Harper is going to be the guy that is going to be a guy for a long time and I can build around, he's really going to develop into star qualities, then I have to evaluate that versus 2 or 3 picks that I might be able to use that could get me players. And I don't know who's coming out in the next two or three years to say that, but I would think that the number two pick used to be really, really valuable. It's now based on potential, so you have to figure out if you think Harper or some of the guys in the top five are worthy of being a franchise-type player, because they are financially stuck to try and improve that team.
You're getting your future picks back are about potential too, though. Like, it's also true with your picks, not just the number two pick.
Sure.
And number two is fixed. You know it's the number two pick, where you don't really know where your picks are going to be based on what your record's going to be. And they're also, like, locking up to Devin Booker. I don't know if they're going to be in tank mode. And then you have the lottery on top of that. So if it were me, I'd rather have the number two pick than my picks back. But, also, we know how it is in the NBA. A lot of times it's the star player driving where he goes, and it's not always the best offer. Texter, Durant's going to get that bag. What did I say? Oh, yeah, this one. Nobody want Shepherd's trash can emoji behind.
Israel.
How'd you know?
Shocker.
How'd you know that was Israel?
Yeah.
how did you know that was him? Don't kick the tires too hard on Durant. He'll get another sprained ankle. Here are a couple of scenarios of what a Kevin Durant hypothetical trade to the Rockets would look like. This one from Bima Thug. Is that how you pronounce it? Bima Thug, the former Clutch Fans guy. I guess he's still there. I haven't been to Clutch Fans in forever. But he was from Clutch Fans fame. Mm-hmm. He's a big financial guy.
Yeah, he's a big cap guy.
Yeah, huge cap guy. I love me some Bima Thug. Is that right? Bima
Thug? I think it's Bima.
Yeah.
How
is it Bima with a B-I-M-A?
You're asking the wrong person. Yeah, I have no idea.
And how do we know? Have we ever heard somebody say Bimathug before?
I think it was, because I think Craig has referenced him on the air before.
Really?
As Bimathug.
How is B-I-M-A Bimathug?
I've only seen it in print or
Same.
Not print.
I've never
but,
heard
you
it.
Know, Twitter, but yeah, I've never heard anyone say it.
Bima or Bimathug. here's his hypothetical on what a Durant trade would look like. Kevin Durant, the 29th pick to Phoenix for Jalen Green, Dylan Brooks, and the 10th pick. Yes or no?
No. Too much.
I have a hard time doing any trade with Jalen Green in it.
I agree. We just discussed it. I don't think that Kevin Durant at this stage in his career is worthy of picks and Jalen Green. I don't think Jalen Green or Şengün should be in a trade for Kevin Durant. So I'm out on that. I mean, if you want it to, from a money standpoint, giving up Dylan Brooks, okay, but not Dylan Brooks, Jalen, and picks. No.
Here was the another one from Zach Krams. Rockets for KD. They get KD. They give up Dylan Brooks, Reed Shepard, Jock Landale, Cam Whitmore, the 10th pick, and then the 27th Suns pick.
I don't like it because it's too many picks.
Two.
Well, it's 10. It's the 27.
That's it.
I thought you said there was one more in there down the road. But regardless, I think that seems like it's a lot. But at the same time, if you're keeping Şengün, you're keeping Green, you get Kevin Durant, are you, in my opinion, 10 is not going to help you for the next couple of years. It's how you value the other picks down the road that I could consider that, but I think it's too much.
I do it.
I have a tough time parting with Reed. Like, Reed, to me, is the biggest one that I'm tough parting there, because Brooks you have to include for the salary. Mm-hmm. Landale's a salary filler. I'm not as high on Cam Whitmore as a lot of people. I side with Ime Udoka on this. The 10th pick, kind of meh. Unless, like, Knepel drops there, then all of a sudden it's pretty intriguing. I like the kid from Arizona, but he's kind of a Tari type of player. The 27 Phoenix pick, I have no idea what that's going to look like, and I feel like they're not going to tank. Like, they're keeping Booker around. The player that I would have the toughest time parting with in that scenario is Reed Shepard, but I like that trade proposal way more than I like the other one.
The only thing, though, that you're concerned about in that deal is Reed Shepard, I mean, I hold out hope that Reed Shepard can develop, but I'm not letting what we saw from Reed Shepard last year stop me from getting Kevin Durant and completing a roster that can make a run at getting to an NBA Finals.
But it's all the pieces, though. Like, Reed's the toughest one I have trouble parting with, but, like, you put together that value and that trade package, I feel like that would bring you a really good player around the league as well.
You see, to me, when I look at the entire scenario, I hold a lot more value in what I see in Cam, but the fact that you're giving up two first-round picks, Reed and Cam, you're giving up two other future picks, which, to your point, you could trade those along with other pieces that you have to get a younger player that you might be able to hang on to longer than Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant's going to want the max deal extension of 2 years and $112 to $124 million, depending on when he signs with you, too. which is going to prevent you financially from doing anything else. I think that whether you look and explore to see if there's a younger player out there that you could possibly acquire if you're using those kind of assets, I think that's too many young assets and pieces that could be used to get somebody for a longer period of time. Not saying better than Kevin Durant, because I know Kevin Durant's really, really good, but he's 30, soon to be 36 years old, I think it is.
Oh, he's a little bit old. I think he's 37, about to be. I think he's, anyway, he's a year older.
And I saw that he was going to be extended, like a 2-year extension, like $60 million per year.
Yeah. This looks like a trade offer I would make in fantasy football, where you throw a bunch of things that look like they're actual.
Here's your Brian's fantasy football takes.
But like this looks like a trade where you throw a bunch of things to get in there that look like they have value, but when you break it out piece by piece, like, can I afford to lose this? Yes, 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 all the way down the line. I'm not going to walk away from a trade for a guy like Durant for a bunch of individual things that I can be fine without. Like the 10th pick. Meh. The first round pick at 27, you have no idea what that's going to be. Cam Whitmore's not going to play. Reed Sheppard hasn't really shown us anything. Jock Landale is
he's filler.
Yeah, it's filler. Like, nothing in here. It's a lot because of the total, but nothing in here is something that's a deal breaker to me. So, sure, sign me up.
My point is more, can you combine this package for something that's more attractive?
Oh, better than Durant?
Yeah.
Fair.
Yeah,
my point's not really against your point. It's more, could you use that package to get something that it would be here longer, isn't as old, maybe not as expensive, fits your timeline a little bit better.
That's fair.
Yeah, it's more on from that front. Now, I am curious to see what Reed Sheppard looks like this year and going forward, but I agree with you that in his rookie year, from what I saw, that I'm not like hell-bent that he's a guy that I can't include in any trade. I wouldn't go that far with him.
No, I wouldn't either. That's what I was saying. I just think that you could, and I don't know, I'm not going to sit there and say I know who that younger player that you could get for longer is, but I think that that kind of package would be attractive to a lot of teams for players, depending on where they are and what they plan on doing for the next couple of years, that you could probably pry someone away for that.
Yeah. All right, Will Doctor, Dr. Media 59 on Twitter, the best golf handicapper in the business, going to break down the U.S. Open at Oakmont with us starting tomorrow. He's going to be on next. The golf tournament starts tomorrow. That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Houston's only FM sports stations, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
This Father's Day at Lowe's, score free gifts for the greatest dad. Right now, get a free select DeWalt, Craftsman, or Kobalt tool with purchase of a select battery kit. Plus, get a free Werner 2-foot aluminum ladder when you buy an 8-foot fiberglass ladder. Shop these deals and more this Father's Day at Lowe's. We help, you save. Valid through 6/15 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.